cliffcentral.com.
Malama ko kayo, kaya rin next week yung Zamba! Next week yung Zamba! Woo! Ayya! At yung happy show.
That's exactly right, December. Yes, good morning, everybody. I hope you're off to an awesome start today. For some reason, I woke up at like 4:30 and I decided, just wake up early. Just start your day a little earlier. So I got some shit done, I started doing some work, and then before you know it, it's 6 o'clock. You know this whole thing, people? By the way, Ryan is in the... he's not in the studio, you're in your house, right?
I'm in my house, yes.
Right. See, there he is. Ryan's been way, way more excited about the World Cup than me. In fact, you kind of remind me how I used to be about the World Cup, which is a bit depressing. It's depressing for me because I used to be like massively excited by it, and I would you know, wake up early, and I'd like catch up on scores that I might have missed. And luckily, you've got a big chart up in the studio that'll explain to us what we've missed out on, and you and Homolemo have been pretty good about filling it in. Is anyone else at the office actually watching?
Dari was pretty interested in it yesterday. Barrett didn't really care for it too much.
Okay, well.
But, yeah, the spirits are pretty high.
Okay, well, I see a lot of people suddenly getting excited. I mean, for example, yesterday there were a couple of matches that people got very, very wound up about. I see the English are still getting excited about, like, they might be bringing it home. They've been saying this for, what, 60, 70 years? That the English have been saying, it's coming home. It never comes home. Huh? What is that?
I think we have a good shot this year. I think we have a good shot.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
That's what you're ready for.
So I was going to say something before we got into this World Cup tangent. You know, there are all these people who are, this is going to get me into trouble, but what the hell? You know, all these self-help people, I mean, they write all these self-help books and they do these podcasts. I mean, people like Tim Ferriss, who, you know, God bless him. He's very good at what he does. And I've never been a fan of Tim Ferriss. I hate these people who are constantly searching to, like, they're putting so much pressure on, first of all, themselves, which is fine. You're allowed to do that, but you don't put like inordinate pressure on everyone else. Like, these people are trying to squeeze three lifetimes into one. Most of them.
Mm.
And, I mean, you know, he's an impressive guy, old Tim Ferriss. I don't take anything away from him. He's built a tremendously successful business. I don't know if I'd want to sit next to him at dinner. I think it would be exhausting. I can't imagine how it must be for his wife/girlfriend. I don't even know what his situation is, to be living with him. He must be a very, very complicated person to live with because there's just so much pressure every day. Got to do this, got to do that, got to do that, got to do that, got to, then taking handfuls of mushrooms, then running up a hill, then, you know, then doing 20 push-ups, then reading a book in 5 seconds. And I just think, God, what a horrible life. There's nothing about that life that I'm at all interested in. I woke up extra early this morning for whatever reason. I suddenly thought, well, this is the kind of life that someone like that aspires to. You know, they want to wake up super, super early. By the way, it's not just Tim Ferriss. It's all these other, you know, podcast bros who, I mean, I really don't think I fit into that category at all. I don't fit into it in terms of the way they live, their politics, the things they're interested in. There's none of that shit. And I thought about it this morning because I woke up extra early and I was sitting doing some work and I suddenly thought, this is way more shit than just sleeping in a little bit. And I think it also boils down to what kind of a person you are. And even though I wake up early Monday to Friday, and I have been for what, the last 14, 15 years of my life, I've never got used to it. I'm much more of a nighttime guy. I don't know about you. What's your, you think you're more of a morning human being or a nighttime human being?
No, I'm night. I don't go to bed before 12.
Yeah.
At all.
Yeah.
To be honest, I spoke to Leanne about this because I had to, when Sims was on leave, then I had to just check on everyone. And I spoke to Leanne the day before just to let her know that I'm on instead of Sims.
Right.
The one day. And we were speaking about it and she said, you know, Ryan, I've been doing this for also like 20 years. And she says it doesn't get any easier. And I thought maybe if you got into it,
no,
it would get easier. But even you saying that you're not getting used to it.
And that's why I always think we have yet to see, because a lot of these podcast bros and these self-help gurus, these are the people who they haven't been doing it long enough for me to be able to trust them yet. Because I've done it for, as I say, a long time now. And it doesn't get any easier. And it's not fun. You never wake up at 4 a.m. and go, oh, yay, it's so great to be up at 4 a.m. Ever, 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 ever. If anyone tells you that, they're just talking complete bullshit. So when I hear people say this stuff, I'm like, yeah, come on. I don't believe you.
I think what's worse is those people who jog at 4 a.m.
No.
I don't know how they do it. Where do you find the motivation?
Uh-huh. Well,
you must have gone through a lot to just be able to just get up and go at 4 a.m.
Well, you know, God bless him. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
I wish you the best of luck. If that's your thing and that's what you like to do, and you know, you take huge pleasure and personal satisfaction out of getting up really early and going for a jog. Or I see these people on the road. I used to see them when I drive into the studio every morning, and it was just unbelievably depressing to me. I mean, I don't feel any – there's no part of me that's jealous of – because they all, first of all, runners look like shit. Anyone will tell you that people who run – you don't even need to believe anyone. Just look at them yourself. They start looking like an old piece of biltong. Way into their like late 30s already. They're already looking like 50. And I just think, yuck, this can't be your knees eventually given. You know, they always have joint problems.
Yes.
Because they really hammer their joints. Now, don't get me wrong. I admire their fitness and I admire their discipline. But I don't think they've chosen the right thing to do. I'm probably going to be shouted down from every angle.
Oh, no, 100%. This conversation is not for everyone.
Anyway.
But it's like, have you seen people that run marathons? Like, just when they get to the end, they're like half shaking. I'm like, why would you put yourself through that?
No, dude. I mean, I like to go to the gym. I like to feel fit. I like to look like I'm in reasonable shape. I like to just, you know, keep the cardio up so that if I'm chased by some kind of monster or wild animal, I can get away from it. Or at least put up a good fight. But
exactly.
but I really think, to me, and there's no way I can prove this, nobody can. You need sleep more than you need exercise. Sleep is absolutely essential to every function of your body. And exercise is hugely important too. But if you only had one, you would need sleep more than you'd need exercise. And I feel like these people who wake up at 4 and they go for a run, especially if they've got to bed like you and I, you know, you said earlier you go to sleep at midnight, you never really go to sleep before then you're really aiming at like 4 hours of sleep a night. That's going to wear you down. You are going to age very badly. You know, you've got to do something every day. I was listening to a podcast of this. There's this lady who's written this book about like how you can manage your time better. And again, I just felt such pressure. Don't get me wrong. I love useful tips on how you can, you know, optimize your life and all that stuff. I really do like that. I mean, I like the idea of being organized and having a schedule and, you know, and setting, you know, deadlines for things and that kind of stuff, because I do think it motivates you and it gets you to do more with your life. But these people who put themselves under this inordinate pressure to have to, you know, wake up, go for a run, read a book, do 10 handstands, crawl across broken glass, eat like, you know, broccoli 8 times a day. I just think what a horrible, horrible life. Like there's no living in that.
Yeah.
I think you've got to have a bit of balance, right?
Yeah, definitely. For me, it's also, and I see George Meany's in the comments as well. He talks about, how it's time consuming. And I think for me, that's the biggest thing. Because I don't have an hour out of my day. Like I struggle as it is, you know,
this is why I don't play golf. This is why I don't do, seriously. I mean, I've never ever understood. And I get that especially as you get older, as an older man, golf starts to become the best thing for you because you get to walk a little bit, you get to hit that ball. It keeps you,
Socialize.
Yeah, and you go and you be with your friends and you get away from your wife, which is why most men play golf. We've discussed this a million times. But to me, I could never, ever justify the hours and hours that those guys will spend on a golf course. Yeah. And it just makes no sense to me. So
I've always said, George says, I exercise.
He says, I exercise because I have to, and health reasons, the less the better. Well, you got to find your own balance. And again, everybody's, you know, some people's jobs are so intense and so hectic that they don't get to exercise as much as the rest of us. And I'm lucky I can figure out my own schedule on a daily basis. So, you know, I'll go to gym when I can, or I'll go for a walk with the dog, or I'll do some light cardio here and there, but I do not. And I figured that I'm not doing too badly. I mean, first of all, for my age, second of all, because I can run and I can, you know, climb 10 flights of stairs without being a completely deranged, breathless fuckwit by the top of it. So I think that's good, you know. George says he exercises 30 minutes 4 or 5 times a week. That's it. Well, again, you've got to decide for yourself. Dr. Robin says, I'm a complete morning person, and yes, I run at 4:45 most mornings. Honestly, I'm a much nicer person when I do. And my day just gets better when I've gotten up early and exercised. Awesome. Awesome. Don't change that. Yeah,
I'm very jealous.
Yeah, I'm not jealous, but I understand what you're doing. Yeah. Mr. E, this is someone new to the comments. It's always good to welcome new to the comment section. I've been listening via podcasts since about August this year. Truly entertaining, informative, and much appreciated. Eric, South African in China. Hey, Eric, without getting yourself into trouble, can you tell us what's going on in China? Because there's a lot of interest in these protests that are taking place. I hear a lot of noise on social media, which you don't normally hear out of China. Now, I don't want to get this guy into trouble. Because the Chinese government you know what they did this week?
What did they do?
To try and drown out any of the protest stuff, if you look up any of the cities where these protests are taking place, you just get huge, huge porn results.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
So, I suppose that's one way.
So someone was showing me on an email how if you look up like Shanghai protest, then all of this like porn gets dumped by the search engines onto you, which is just incredible. It's like anti-propaganda. They're just trying to drown out the protest stuff with porn. It's amazing how the Chinese government is still, they kind of think they can control the narrative. It's a lot like the Democrats in the US. They don't look with your own eyes. Don't try and figure it out yourself. Just believe us. We know the truth. And I just don't know how these people can think that way in the year 2022, when it's so patently obvious to anyone who's watching or listening that these governments have done nothing but lie to us.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's conspiratorial for anybody to be watching what's going on in China and to not think, I really hope that the protesters win. I mean, it's highly unlikely, right? The Chinese will just deploy the military and just roll over these people, and it's going to be hideous and there's going to be a lot of violence. But you've got to hold out some hope for ordinary Chinese people who are just like people anywhere else in the world. Just they want to be in control of their own lives, their own destiny, their own family, their own freedom. And you've got to, unless you're a maniac, you've got to feel sorry for these guys, because they live under the boot of this totalitarian regime. They live under the yoke of this communist system. And unless you are one of the party elite, like, you know, if you're an ANC cadre in South Africa and you've got some government tenders, you suffer. It's not easy for the ordinary Chinese person. They're just trying to live their life. And this government is they're a bunch of complete dicks. I mean, this Xi Jinping, the premier, he's basically just installed himself for another 5 years basically for life now. I don't even think it's 5 years. He's going to be there until he's dead, like Chairman Mao or Deng Xiaoping, you know? It's just unbelievable. Anyway, so we've really jumped around a lot in the first couple of minutes here, but let's just go to the comments. check Gareth's Christmas lights. Where is the Boney M? We'll get to that. But I said yesterday I'm doing Christmas decorations. Yes, you did. So I'm a man of my word. I got home after a pretty busy day yesterday, and I thought, if I don't do this, then people are going to say, oh, you said you're going to do it in the whole of December. You fucking lied. So here it is. I've done it. All right, assholes. Now, the more stressful a time I'm having, says Dr. Robin, the more important it becomes to have that run. It allows me to cope with things better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Jesus, who's pissed in your tea this morning, says Kampamba. Why? Are we moaning?
I don't feel like we're moaning. Maybe in the beginning.
Did we moan? I don't recall us moaning.
I don't think so.
I was saying I'm just not into these hardcore podcast bros who try to, you know, like make everything difficult and everything is this unbelievable challenge that you have to mount on a daily basis. It's just exhausting. I think that's all I said, but I don't know. Xi Jinping grafts out my daily exercise and table format on my phone. He really cares about my health. What a guy, says Corona's boring. Yeah. Mr. E says, I can just confirm that what you mentioned is mostly accurate. However, there has been times I was listening and I wanted to correct a statement or two. Well, bro, feel free. I mean, you know, this show is open to correction every day from anyone who's listening. And I regularly have to correct things. John Bad Dog says, running is not worth the damage to joints for little reward. Way better ways to exercise than running. Well, that's kind of what I've also picked up from people who are in the know, people who are way more clued up about this stuff than I am. The Chinese have been welding buildings' doors shut to keep people inside. Yeah, I saw that. And then a bunch of people died because a fire broke out and they couldn't get the fire engines anywhere near and they couldn't get the firemen in through the doors because they'd welded them shut. Can you imagine a government that does that to its own people?
But I can't imagine them doing that. That's the sad thing.
Oh, it's horrendous, right? That voice GC did sounds just like Ryan. What the voice?
Oh, man.
All right. Sorry, Ryan. There we go. All right. So let's just quickly get back to the World Cup because you've got this chart you've been filling in. You've been putting in the scores every day. When do we go to the group of 16? Next week?
I think so, as far as I know. I think England is now, after last night.
That's right.
They're in. I'm trying to think who else. I don't have that chart with me at home.
Useless.
That's studio. But
really.
I was putting it in yesterday on our socials. I think the video's there.
Yeah, here it is. Take a look at this.
All right, so we are busy updating the scores from yesterday. We're starting a fresh new week. We've been keeping track as we're going. We've got the chart going in the office. So it is the 29th today. Yesterday was the 28th. So we're filling in over here. I don't know if you want to come and have a look. So yesterday we had Brazil, Switzerland. We had Cameroon and Serbia.
This is Ryan's audition for a role on Supersport, and I don't think it went very well.
Look, I can't compete with those guys, but, you know, we're just trying to keep people in the know because, you know, this all happens during a work day, and I'm not sure how many different companies allow their people to actually just watch the football while they're working.
You know? I don't know. I don't know either.
I'd love to know.
I would hope that there are companies that do this, that you know, that give just a little bit of leeway. I mean, I don't expect you to give people time off and they skive off and do nothing. But it's almost December. It's not as if everybody's working at full capacity at the moment. Let's just be realistic. Yeah, you know, you don't have to put yourself under undue pressure here. I think that's kind of the theme from 6 o'clock this morning. All these people are putting us under undue pressure. Can I play you something quickly since we're talking about Supersport?
Yes.
That was a horrible audition that you just did for Supersport, but it's still better than what they've actually got on Supersport. So I don't know who these people are or what this show is called, but they're talking about the World Cup. And there's this woman who I'm not sure who she is either, but I can't help thinking that it's probably one of those situations where they've put a woman on to talk about soccer because they feel like that's gender representative, even though women hate soccer and don't give a shit about it. And they're probably, for every 10 men who watch soccer, there's one woman who watches it. And we've got to stop bullshitting ourselves, because this is the same kind of patronizing nonsense that I had a discussion with Lebung about months ago, when she said, I love Banyana, and then I asked her to name one player, and she couldn't. So let's just stop with this virtue signaling nonsense, because we're putting people on TV who shouldn't be on TV. Listen to this idiot. This woman is supposedly a presenter on Supersport, and they're having a conversation about Ronaldo and Messi, which... And I'm no sports fan, right? I mean, I know enough to know that Ronaldo and Messi are two of the greatest footballers of all time, and that there's this kind of rivalry that people make up about them. Who's the greatest of all time? Which of them is better than the other? That kind of thing. This is her contribution, all right? And bear in mind, this idiot is being paid money to do this TV show. And this is how low Supersport have sunk in terms of the kind of crappy people they're hiring to do shows. Listen to her expert analysis and how wonderfully deep her thoughts are on this Messi and Ronaldo rivalry. You ready?
I'm ready. Let's go.
That's funny, but yeah. Seriously, though, guys, who do you want to win this one? Tweaky, Ronaldo, Messi, who do you think?
Messi, because Ronaldo's a puss. I'm not going to support him.
Can you say that? Can we get away with that? Okay, I don't know about that, but anyway, I'm a Cristiano Ronaldo.
Ronaldo's a puss, according to the woman in the pink. I mean, do me a favor and find out who that is, because that person, how low must the talent bar be to put someone like that on television? Now I am moaning, because I'm not even a football fan, so why would I be upset by that? I don't think that that's, you know, I'm not a fanboy of either of these guys. I think they're both tremendous and entertaining and great. But, I'm not upset by it. I just can't believe that Supersport would put shit like this on and try to pass it off to sports fans as entertainment. How's that entertaining to anybody?
That is, I didn't even know about that.
Shit.
But that is pathetic. I can't even believe that went on air. That the producers must have had a fit.
Well, it says Supersport in the corners. It must have been on TV. But it's, you know, I wouldn't be surprised, man, if this is part of that whole, like, that whole movement to try and get, like, women presenters to do stuff. Because then, you know, maybe more women will watch, or it's more representative or whatever. This is where, you know, you go woke, you go broke. And they deserve to be losing audience in the numbers that they are. So good luck to them. We'll see how it goes. I just thought that would be an interesting aside to your audition. So, Ryan, you know what? Based on how bad she is, you could actually get a job at Supersport.
can I tell you what? This whole thing with Ronaldo, there's been a lot that's been going on with him. I'm sure you saw, like, last week or the week before, he had an interview with Piers Morgan, which basically broke the internet about his contract with Manchester United.
Yeah, I saw that. Well, I saw clips of that on the internet.
So now they've officially settled it. He's being released from his contract. He has to pay a £50,000 fine, and now he can go separate ways.
That's like 2 days of salary for him, man. That's nothing.
It's not. I think it's 5 minutes probably. Like he gets $500,000 a week. Well, used to.
Wow.
He's got $500,000 a week, which is crazy.
Well, the thing that made me laugh is a whole bunch of people who've only really been supporting Man United because of Ronaldo. So now they're like, oh, thank God, now I can finally support a decent team.
All right. But what a stupid excuse. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, let's see what happens there. I'm slowly starting to get more into this World Cup. You can tell already. We've spent like the last 5 minutes talking about it, even though it's tangentially about a whole lot of other things. But you've got some interesting facts about this World Cup. You want to throw those in quickly before we get to headlines?
Yeah.
Go for it.
So, we'll start at Cristiano Ronaldo. There was a bit of controversy in the last game because he supposedly scored his 100th goal for Portugal. Yep. But according to, I don't know if Adidas has some like sensor in the ball.
Right.
They had to check it because it was so close. On the header that he did, Bruno Fernandes kicked it in. And it seems like Bruno Fernandes got the goal and not Ronaldo. So he's still sitting on 99 goals and not 100 for Portugal.
Okay.
And look, I think he's just going after it because he's trying to chase stats, you know? And I mean, I would too. You get your 100th goal for Portugal. I think Messi's on like 93 for Argentina or something like that. So he would be the first to get like 100. He's also the first. He holds the record for being the youngest player to play for Portugal. And now officially the oldest player. And as you said on the show, I think it was yesterday or the day before.
That's amazing.
He's the only player in the world to score in 5 World Cups.
Phenomenal.
Which is great. And then Messi, you know, they had to get him in there. He's the first player in the world to assist in 5 World Cups.
Yeah.
Which is great. Then I got a couple others here for you, you know.
Sanella says there's a Cliff Central scoreboard. Yay. I don't think Sanella's as excited as you are about this.
No. Well, can I tell you what? It's so interesting just to hear these facts as the days go by, because I'm really enjoying the World Cup. I think, you know, all the politics is finally like sorting itself out, and we can finally move off of that. Brazil have been undefeated in their last 17 group games at the FIFA World Cup, which is a record. Germany did not win their first 2 matches at the World Cup for the first time since 1938. Lionel Messi scored his 8th World Cup goal in 21 matches, the same as legendary Diego Maradona. And Olivier Giroud, who plays for France, has equaled Thierry Henry's record for World Cups at 51 goals.
Okay,
which is
some useful stuff to know.
Really cool things.
You see, again, like if you're a big sports fan, you dive into this stuff and it becomes really, really exciting. Even if it's only for the World Cup. And I mean, this is what I used to do. I'd get to know every team. I would know who the main, you know, strikers were, what their rate of success was. And suddenly you're digging into statistics that most of the time I couldn't give a shit about. But then around the World Cup, I suddenly do. I just want to throw this in because Donna's making a classic mistake here. She says, hey, this woman here loves to keep up to date with soccer, so not all women dislike. Okay. You know what?
That's not what you mean.
Really, Donna, I wish that you and people who think like this would just understand the difference between making a generalization and someone talking to you. Please understand, when we say something and I say, one out of every 10 women like soccer and 9 out of every 10 guys probably like soccer, that is a generalization. I don't need you to tell me from your personal lived experience that you love soccer, so therefore my rule's bullshit. It's still true and nobody cares. Do you understand? Like, it's a simple, straightforward thing here. To make things all about you every time must be exhausting for you. I mean, it must be just so tiring to constantly just try and compare your own life and your own experience to everything that gets said. And no, that's not true for me. No, that's true for me. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true for me. Wait, but me. Like, come on. Really? It's just exhausting. Watching my friends is much more fun trying to score at a pub for 90 minutes, says Propaganda. Oh, God. Absolutely.
That's
so
awesome.
Yonder has some info on that woman on the Supersport clip I played you. That is Twiggy, a social influencer who does a lot of brands. Oh, that's just horrible. She's an influencer who does a lot of brands. You know, again, I got to ask, like, who are these brands who are trusting people who like, what's her track record? Like, what has she done before? Can she entertain more than 3 people for more than 5 minutes? I'm ashamed, says Yonda. I know her well. Met her 4 years ago on a Corona trip to the Maldives. We became acquainted. What nonsense she speaks. Ah, well, you know, good luck to her trying to keep her career going. Here's Mr. E says, got to go. Wish everyone a truly good week further. Please stay mindful when discussing politics in China. Don't mess around, please. Stay awesome, everyone. All right. Well, we'll try. You got to help us fill in the gaps there, dude. Dear Linda says, but if you actually listen to the interview, Ronaldo was actually very diplomatic about what he said. The media twisted everything as usual. Not surprised. Yeah. That happens. You do take your life in your hands, though, when you go on Piers Morgan, I think, because he's also one of those people who likes to you know, create controversy. He'll edit a promo to make it look like you've said something really controversial when you really haven't. Then you watch the interview, you're like, oh, that wasn't a big deal at all. But of course, most people don't watch the interview. They just watch the promo.
Well, I mean, that was the case in this thing. Mm-hmm. When he released the first short clips, he released three short clips over like the span of 4 days or whatever. He obviously took the most vile parts of the interview, and yeah. Man United were looking at suing him for over £1 million. Then the interview came out, and now it's, you know, we'll just cut ties and pay 50,000. I said those little clips did more damage than the actual interview itself.
I'm sure.
The actual interview wasn't that bad. He was human.
I'm sure about that. Yeah, absolutely.
But Piers Morgan is such a clout chaser. It's actually...
No, he is, totally. I mean, I remember reading his first book. It's somewhere here on my shelf. Yeah, God Bless America. What a terrible book. They asked me to review it for some... What was it, like a TV show or a newspaper or something? And they asked me to review this Piers Morgan book. It's basically one big name-dropping exercise from beginning to end. Piers Morgan, you know, for all the things he criticizes Meghan Markle for, and she probably deserves that criticism... He only dislikes her because he's exactly the same when it comes to name dropping and trying to be in with all the famous people. And I mean, part of the reason he's so upset with Meghan Markle is personal.
Yes.
It's because she didn't stay friends with him after she married Harry, you know. And he's like, don't you like me anymore? Because they met at a pub or something, and he and Meghan were close, and then they weren't close anymore, so he became all mean about her. It's like, you know.
That's his like life story.
Mm.
He literally talks about it. He's like, "Well, she was out with me at a pub the night she went to meet Harry." And I was like, "Oh,
yeah."
Well,
that's his. If that's his claim to fame, good for him. I mean, I do think Piers Morgan's an intelligent guy. He makes a good point every now and then, right? And I find myself reluctantly agreeing with him, even though I don't think he's a very cool person. And we must never forget what he did when he was at the Daily Mirror, where he was. You know, he was one of those scummy, scuzzy, like trash journalists, and he would do unbelievable things like phone tapping in order to get stories. So I'm not a Piers Morgan fan at all, but occasionally he does say something that is quite useful and interesting. We're going to find out later on from Brett Hope Robertson what's going on with crypto. Especially in the wake of the whole FTX drama, which we did discuss last Monday, and we've got into it in some detail. In fact, Jonathan Witt was on Thursday telling us a little bit about this Sam Bankman-Fried dude. But we're going to find out what the impact has been on crypto and also what's happening to our crypto investments, because many of us are sitting there looking at the prices going, oh God, have we hit the bottom yet? Please let this be the bottom. This week so far has been more of a hopeful one. So we'll get into that later on with Brett. Let me just quickly go through some headlines for you so we can just talk about the important stuff for a minute. SARS has just launched a new travel pass. Now, anytime SARS does something, I'm immediately nervous. They've decided to pilot a new traveler declaration system at Durban's King Shaka Airport. All travelers leaving or entering South Africa will eventually need to complete this declaration, but for now it's voluntary. They say they're on a mission to strengthen controls to detect and deter illicit financial flows. No, they're not. They're on a mission to try and get more of your money. That's what they're trying to do. The Revenue Service has set its sights on the country's ports of entry as a front line for the fight, recently launching the South African Traveler Management System. Anytime someone says they're trying to manage you, you should be worried. They say it makes it easy and simple for travelers to comply with their legal obligation. No, you mean the gun you put to our head where we have to give you half our money every month. That's what you mean, don't you, mm-hmm. SARS? Anyway, they started testing it at Durban, King Shaka Airport, following a delay brought about by concerns from the tourism industry. Yeah, that would be a thing. Can you imagine if SARS start like digging through people's luggage to try and find out whether they're bringing a gold chain in or taking one out that they bought with their own money. The new system is web-based and will enable travelers entering and leaving the country to pre-declare goods purchased, received, or otherwise acquired and pay applicable taxes. The declaration is currently available for completion, pre-arrival, or pre-departure. Okay, so it sounds like what it's always been, But now you get to do it on online, which may or may not be better. Who knows? But they say once tried and tested, this will be rolled out across other airports and eventually to all ports of entry by 2024. While SARS has set an ambitious target of implementing this new system at all points of entry, this timeline will ultimately be guided by the success of the pilot project at Kinshasa Airport. So, all right, guys, go for it. We're all very excited that SARS are going to be better at their jobs.
Yeah.
Says absolutely nobody. Really, if you're excited about SARS doing a better job, then you don't understand what SARS is. It's like a big, gigantic mosquito, half your body weight, that lands on you and sucks half your blood out and then says to you, "No, go back to work because I'm coming back next month for more." That's what they are. That's what they are. Anyway, the Hawks, while we're talking about government and government departments, the Hawks, who seem to be getting back into their stride, have appointed a new deputy chief, but 48% of their posts still remain unfilled. They say that they're working towards filling 1,500 posts as soon as possible. They are getting to flying at capacity, they say. Lieutenant General Godfrey Lebia revealed that the Directorate for Priority Crime Investigation, as the unit's officially known, is operating at 52% capacity. They announced that 244 officials, ranging from junior to middle management, were recently appointed to fill the vacancies. And apparently they've appointed this guy called Lieutenant General Sipesile Nkosi, who will start on the 1st of November next year. What, 1st of November? I'm sure they mean the 1st of December. Because 1st of November was a month ago, and this article was published today. So, Angaz. But I hope for their sake it is the 1st of December. Because if it's only the 1st of November next year, what's he going to do in the meantime? They're appointing another 5 senior managers, blah, 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 blah. There are another 290 posts currently sitting before panels. I mean, listen, I'm not sympathetic to government ever, but it must be so hard to appoint people to anything. Because whoever you appoint has to go through so many processes just to make sure that they're not a crook, just to make sure that they didn't get the job from their uncle or cousin or aunt or whatever. So it's got to be hard to appoint people, and it's even harder to fire people. So you've got to make sure you appoint the right person from the get-go, you know. Do you want to say something?
No, I said no. That's exactly right.
Okay, well.
I wouldn't want to be in that position.
I'm sorry about all this bad news this morning, but this is one last one. Two security guards employed by a company who's contracted by Eskom to protect the Port Rex power station in East London were arrested on Monday for allegedly stealing 6,000 litres of diesel.
Wow.
You think they're taking that away one jerry can at a time? I mean,
well, that's what I'm thinking. I'm trying to think of the logistics behind this heist. Like,
6,000 litres.
It can't be a mastermind. You know what I mean?
I mean, what is a bath? A geezer is 20 liters, right? So, I would imagine a bath maybe 20 to 30 liters, the ordinary average bath. I might be wrong. And if you're listening to us now, and you know the number of what the capacity of a bath is in terms of liters, I'd be very much interested in what that number is. Because if you have to get to 6,000, then I could work it out by numbers of bathtubs, you know? Because you can't carry away diesel in an open container.
No.
I mean, it's flammable. You can smell it. It's really something you have to transport very carefully. So I'd be interested to know. But there we go. Okay, geezers, 250 liters. Jesus. Okay, wow. 20 liters a basin. Really? Sure, I have no idea. All right. Wow, I'm useless at this. Hadmin says the average bathtub is 80 liters. So, like, you guys are also getting this all messed up. Stevie says normal geezer is 150 to 200 liters. Here we go. All right. Yeah, George says they cut holes in the floor of vehicles, open the manholes, and pump the fuel out. They've done this at filling stations in broad daylight. Just park over the manhole. Oh, wow. So these are professionals. Oh. Okay.
Okay, yeah. So scrap that earlier comment.
Well, they are meant to be security guards. They were arrested while on duty. The stolen diesel's valued at just under 146,000 rand. Through internal investigations, it was established that they permitted a vehicle to collect the stolen diesel from the site during the night shifts, for which they were paid in return. Unbelievable. Criminals are working the system, eh? They really are. This is amazing.
That time, it's December. Everyone's trying to get some money.
Everyone wants some money. That's exactly right. And Will Smith says bottled rage led him to slap Chris Rock at the Oscars. Is anyone really still interested in why Will Smith behaved so bad? Is anyone sitting around going, you know, it still bugs me that I don't know how Will Smith was feeling at the time he did. Anybody?
No.
No?
Trevor Noah had him on the show, and that's when he told the story.
Okay.
But then I really didn't care. If you're telling that show on The Daily Show of all shows, I mean,
Can I quote from him and tell you why I think this is just absolute bullshit and he shouldn't be given such an easy ride by Trevor or anyone else? So here's what he said.
Right.
He was interviewed, described it as a horrific night. Appearing on The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, he said, these are Will Smith's words, I was going through something that night, you know. You know, I'm tired of people talking around things. Like, say, what were you going through? It doesn't help for you. Of course we can tell you were going through something, you moron. You hit someone. You walked up and physically assaulted a comedian. We can tell you were going through something. How about you explain what was going through your thick skull at that point? Because you behaved like someone who didn't think it through at all. So how about you tell us what that something is? You know, it's like someone says...
Did you see what he said after that?
No, well, we'll get to that in a second, because it's like when someone says to you, you say, how are you? Oh, I'm going through a lot. You're like, what? A lot of what? That's not an answer. Oh, you know, the other day, this thing happened. You're like, what thing?
What thing? Like, yeah.
Have we lost the ability to communicate with meaningful words? Have we forgotten how to tell a story? This is like the oldest thing humans have been able to do, tell a story. People are battling with this. Like, oh, just, it's such a thing. You know, it's too much. Like, too much of what? Talk properly. Anyway, he says, not that that justifies my behavior at all, going through something, Smith said. Mm. There were many nuances and complexities to it. Oh, really? Nuances and complexities? No, it's pretty much caveman behavior. You walk up, you smack someone. That's what cavemen do. There's no nuance and complexity. What are you going to tell us that you sat there and you thought about Nietzsche and Immanuel Kant and you decided, no, what you were going to do is take the low road rather than the high road. And you had very good reasons for that because, you know, you're such a thoughtful person. No nuance. Sorry. No complexity. You just behaved like a reptile. That's what you did, Will. Anyway, he says, I understand how shocking that was for people, he told Noah. I was gone. That was a rage that had been bottled for a really long time. Okay, now we're getting into something. Mm-hmm. He said he understood the pain that he'd caused, recalled the reaction of his 9-year-old nephew that night. Ugh. Why did you hit that man, Uncle Will? It was a mess. But you see, he's not really taking responsibility for this because he's not really telling us exactly what he was thinking at the time, if he was thinking at all. And if he's not telling us because he doesn't have an answer, that's one thing. But I don't believe that with all these months of reflection, he hasn't at least come up with a better answer than it was something. Anyway, so there it is. There's your latest update of nonsense Hollywood bullshit. Let's turn our attention to much more important things. Now it's time for us to check in with Revex Beyond Bitcoin. This is your chance to catch up with your own portfolio and find out what is happening in the world of cryptocurrency. And Revex allows you to effortlessly own a diversified portfolio of the world's top cryptocurrencies, which automatically stays up to date with the ever-changing market. And man, oh man, has that market been changing. So here to help us understand it, we have none other than Brett Hope Robertson, who is live on the line from Cape Town. First of all, Brett, how's it going this week? Are you feeling a bit better than you did last week?
Yeah, thanks for having me, Gareth. I mean, this month in general has been, you know, quite a whirlwind, huh?
Jeez, man.
I think it's been this crypto space where I might look back one day and be like, I remember where I was when FTX news broke. It was kind of that big.
All right. So
I don't know how much you guys have gone into it, though.
Yeah. Well, let's just talk. I think for the purposes of this discussion, tell us about the differences between FTX and a platform like Revex, because the immediate concern that some people will have is, well, any of these exchanges or anywhere where you can buy and sell crypto is potentially dangerous. And that is not true. I mean, you know, there was this rivalry between Binance and FTX for a long time too, which is worth discussing. But what are the main reasons that we shouldn't be panicking like so many people have since the FTX collapse? If maybe we should, maybe we should be panicking. Tell us the truth.
Yeah. So I think the main thing with this FTX saga, right, is it's not even like a lending issue or anything like that. It's just outright fraud.
Right.
Pretty much is what's kind of happened here. I mean, if you understand the intricacies of pretty much this Alameda Research, which was pretty much Sam Bankman-Fried's own hedge fund, that was plugged right. into FTX and kind of front-running customer trades to start anyway, which is first pretty much illegal. And second of all, this hedge fund pretty much got hurt during the first Luna crash with Three Arrows Capital, etc. And what this hedge fund does is they take leverage bets. So they loan from other parties to take out bets. And they got caught and they owed a lot of creditors money. Now, Sam and his team somehow decided that it'll be a good idea to plug this hole. I don't want to let my hedge fund kind of go down. Although full know that it was done pretty much, right? And he basically engineered a way to let Alameda siphon off customer funds to plug this hole so that the hedge fund can kind of go again and hopefully they'll pay it back in the future if they don't get caught. I mean, that's pretty much outright fraud. They literally issued their own token, sent it to Alameda Research so that Alameda Research could send it back to FTX as collateral to take out customer funds.
Right.
That's crazy. So, I mean,
people always saying, oh, well, you know, the danger, especially politicians, they go, the danger with crypto is it's unregulated. You know, it's not controlled by us, the politicians. And people in crypto are always going, well, actually, we prefer this decentralized thing. But this wasn't a fault of crypto. This was fraud. No. And in fact, this guy was in collusion with a whole lot of politicians. He was a big Democrat funder in the U.S. too. So you can't now separate the politicians out and go, okay, well, this is an excuse to suddenly cram down on crypto.
No, you can't. But you do kind of see a part where, you know, you want regulated space, because otherwise you do end up with a couple of smart traders running one of the biggest exchanges in the world with no regulation, and things like this will happen, right? So that's why kind of at Revex, we've always pushed for a regulatory framework. So mm-hmm. you can weed out these bad actors ahead. You have customer protection at the forefront of everything. You have to. So I think for people's understanding, FTX is an exchange. Revex is a brokerage. So there's a big difference there. An exchange has no excuse to ever hold assets outside of a cold storage, because all your transactions happen on your own exchange. Whereas at Revex, we plug into multiple exchanges to go and find our customers their best price. But what we do is we only hold a certain amount of liquidity on these exchanges that we use custody partners that will basically, in essence, put liquidity onto the exchange to execute and then pull it off. So we use also multiple exchanges. We use multiple custody partners. Mm-hmm. To the point that if one had to go down, our cash reserves would happily cover any assets of a customer that's been lost. So we diversified out to, you know, say, for example, no more than 10% on one exchange. And if anything had to happen, 90% of customer assets are held in completely different areas. So that's the kind of basics of how this kind of system works. But as I said, I mean, this is a fraud issue. This isn't a lending right. issue. This isn't a company that's been caught lending out assets for yield at a ridiculous rate to a dodgy, you know, counterparty. This is literally him trying to protect his own hedge fund and using customer assets to do so.
I love the way that when something like this happens in crypto, then everybody gets combed with the same brush. As if everyone is as crooked as SBF and his girlfriend. But when this happens with a bank, oh no, it's just that one bank that's terrible, you know. And it's got to be them. It's not all the other banks who are all in constant collusion with each other. Anyway, it's just a double standard, and I thought it would be useful and funny for you to point out that hypocrisy this morning too. You are the head of investments at Revix. Going into the end of the year, what do you think the really interesting buys are, and where would you be putting your money now? Would you be just leaving it in your crypto wallet with whatever you've already bought, be that Ethereum, Bitcoin, you know, whatever it might be? Or would you be changing things now? Would you be looking at rebalancing that portfolio a little bit?
So, yeah, it's a good question. And what I have seen from this whole FTX saga, right, this is by all means supposedly the Lehman Brothers moment of crypto. As we were saying, this is, you know, the third biggest exchange going pop. But what I have realized is this market hasn't really reacted the way I thought it would. It's been pretty strong to a sense that, think about when Lehman went down, you know, a worldwide recession pretty much started straight afterwards. This has ended up with Bitcoin dropping 15 to 20%. I mean, it's not the worst. We've seen worse days in crypto. And I was quite surprised at this reaction. To be honest, I think maybe the Luna and Terra collapse actually was a lot more vicious and took out a lot more value. And that's kind of made me pretty happy and pretty bullish on this market going forward. It's almost like it's kind of run its course of bad news now, that even one of the biggest exchanges can go down and it's not really budging anymore. So for me, that's kind of a really good telltale sign. It almost feels like it's a balloon that's kind of been held underwater at the moment. With a whole bunch of water, you've got macro, you've got FTX going down, you've got a whole bunch of stuff. And I think as soon as you get a little bit of clearance, we could be at these kind of generational bottom areas. I mean, it's normally when everyone's running scared and looking to pull everything onto a cold storage wallet and put it in their drawer and put on their tinfoil hat that things start to start to turn. So
also, I mean, let's just be honest for a second here, Brett. There's, you know, I'm if I take my money out now, I'm at such a loss. So I might as well just stick that's, with it, right?
It's a good tax write off, right?
Jesus, don't even say it. Are you optimistic that we'll start seeing some recovery in these prices? Because there's no indication anywhere that it's attached now to anything. You know, we always used to say, well, you know, if gold goes up, crypto comes down, or they correlate, or, you know, the stock market goes up, crypto goes down, whatever it might be. Now you can see that this is not tethered to anything else necessarily, and therefore it's its own animal for the first time ever. What would your prediction? Again, this doesn't go, you know, down as financial advice, but what's your prediction?
So I'm quietly optimistic into beginning of next year that we're going to see quite a turn. I think, as we said, yes, it's not really correlated to anything, but it will be correlated to the amount of money that people can spend, right? And I think as soon as you start to see inflation come down a bit more and a bit of the tightening of the belt kind of release a little bit, we will see, you know, a bit of more money flow into this market. I think what the levels we're at now is those levels where it's like, hey, as you said, you know, you're in it, we're in it, people aren't going to pull from here. So it's just basically new money will flow in, will cause this thing to kind of go up. And I think there's been a lot of pretty positive signs in the wake of this stuff. I mean, you've seen Shell kind of step in and start offering its cooling solution to Bitcoin miners. I mean, that's a major oil giant giving its tech to crypto. You've seen Ethereum, which is, you know, one of my favorite plays at the moment, has become completely deflationary during this moment. So it's one of these deflationary assets in a time where inflation is running rampant. It's a very powerful tool as a value add and a diversifier to your portfolio. And as we've seen with regards to, you know, everyone running to the DeFi world, well, it's pretty much built on Ethereum. 90% of these applications are built on Ethereum.
There's a question here. I mean, this is what I love is, you know, Michael just heard this now and he's like, whoa, what would you say tax write-off? So he says, can I write off income tax against my losses in crypto? I'm sure you can, right?
Yeah, if you sell it and realize the loss.
Yeah. I mean, you get the tax write-off, but you also you realize the loss, as you say. So nothing's for free.
Yeah. So hedge funds do that, you know, in the US quite a lot. It's like their little window shopping area into tax season. They'll go sell all their losses, realize that loss over the month of tax season, and go buy that thing straight back.
Right.
And hopefully the same price. So you get your tax write-off and you buy it back and off you go into the next year.
All right. Well, we are looking at $16,877 for a Bitcoin. Where were we at the beginning of the year? Do you remember?
Poof. Would have been 40-ish, I would have thought.
Oh, that hurts. All right. Well, maybe we'll have some really good news in the beginning of next year. Anyway, Brett, listen, thank you for your time and your information this morning. It's always helpful to have some of your insights. And let's see what's going on. Hodl, hodl, hodl. We'll talk to you soon.
Cool, man. Cheers,
thanks,
guys.
Thanks, dude. Bye-bye. Cheers. This is Brett Hope Robertson from Revix.com. You can find out more by going to Revix.com. You can follow them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram with @RevixInvest, the smart way to invest in crypto. Well, Sanele has something to say here. He says, 3 days without morning coffee. Past 2 days, I've been a glass of morning alcohol. I'm not doing that today. I need to buy coffee today. Now I'm moaning. See what you've done, Gareth. Not my fault, Sanele. You decide what to put in your own body. And if you're suffering, that's your problem. sorry. What do you want me to say? But drinking alcohol first thing in the morning? I've never been a fan of that. Ever.
Nope.
Even on holiday. Not good. All right. So coming up in the next little bit, we've got an interesting interview with a guy who was the COO of Lego. He's one of the people who transformed that company from a sinking ship to a juggernaut. He's written a book called Deliver What You Promise, and he shares all sorts of business lessons from his own story to help the rest of us become much more efficient, to understand our business better, obviously, to connect meaningfully with the market. In this conversation that I had with him, he also shares the story of his own blue-collar origins and the failures that taught him how to become a success. So we'll hear from Bali Pade just now. We'll get into that. Sanele and everybody else in the comments all having a discussion around whether you can have alcohol first thing in the morning. I would say no. I mean, famously, Winston Churchill would have his first drink at like 9 a.m. And then he did beat Hitler, and he did guide the free world through the Second World War. But not everybody is Winston Churchill. He also happened to have written, 80 books and delivered some of the best speeches in political history. And do all kinds of other amazing things. I mean, he was here in South Africa and made a daring escape out of Pretoria. So the guy was not average like me and you. And if we drink alcohol like he did early in the morning, it might just kill us. It may not make us better. That's just saying. By the way, lots of cool comments yesterday on the Howard Hughes episode of Blind History. So if you haven't heard that yet, go and take a listen to it. We put that out live yesterday. And in fact, we're nearing the end of the season. Anthony Meter is coming in on Thursday morning to record the last episode of this season. And then we're pretty much done with Blind History for the year. So let us know if you have any ideas. And also if you've got some... You know, maybe you're a company that wants to get behind Blind History. I always say this, but it's such an obvious thing. If you are someone who understands the value of these podcasts and what they do and how they create a community, and Anthony could tell you what they've done for Taylor Blinds when he was the CEO there, and how well they did as a result of this, then you can come in and get behind it too. And maybe you want to start doing your own podcast. We can help you do that too. CliffCentral.com. Send us an email, contact@cliffcentral.com, and we'll help you figure it out. That's what we're going to do. Sanele says, you just inspired my moaning, Gareth. I'm doing to alcohol what you did to that me woman. okay. Did anyone watch the movie Another Round about the drinking experiment? It did not end well, says Audrey. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I've never seen that, but maybe it's worth watching. Another Round. Okay, I'll make a note. George says Churchill died at 90. Yeah, he did. No, he had a great life. I'm just saying that not all of us have the superhuman powers that Churchill seemed to have had with alcohol. and especially because, I mean, he used to do a lot of his work from the bed in the morning. You know, his secretary would come in with a pile of papers, and say to him, Prime Minister, here's all your stuff for the day. He'd sit in bed with a tray. He'd have a whiskey and he'd get a cup of tea and he would start working from the bed. So again, not everybody can do that.
No.
Yeah. All right. Very good. That's all we got time for this morning, everybody. It is 7 o'clock, but when I come back, I'll introduce Bali Pada to you. And I think you'll be interested to hear what he has to say. Stick around. All of that and more on the way. CliffCentral.com.